Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Welcome everyone to this new episode of our podcast. Today I'm very delighted to have as my guest Professor Natalie Nasu. She's a professor of neurology and stroke physician of the University of Poitiers in France. She is also the chair of the education committee of the EAN, and she's also co-chair of the scientific panel of neurosonology. Her research mainly focuses on cerebral circulation and the impact of the autonomic nervous system, but I would like Natalie to introduce yourself, please.
Well, hi everyone, and thank you, Roberta, for this very kind introduction. It's my pleasure to be here with you. So my name is Natalie Nas. What I do? Well, I'm a stroke physician, and for my research, I mainly focus on, as Roberta said, the regulation of cerebral blood flow, how this is modified by the autonomic nervous system, and also cardiovascular stress in a more general way, and how this impact from the autonomic nervous system will modify the prognosis of both acute brain lesions, as in stroke or TBI, and how it can also have an impact on accelerated cerebrovascular aging. And one of my main interests is actually how this is extreme physiology can help us understand what happens in pathological conditions. And one of the extreme physiology situation to study is space or microgravity in general. And this is a very nice input for us on what happens in actually both healthy aging and also pathological conditions.
So I'm very interested about what you said about space, but let's begin from the start. How does someone even get in the field of research of cerebral circulation in space? How did you start working in this field?
Well, it's one thing that goes to very long time ago, my interest in space, how human bodies can adapt to space, to this extreme environment with radiations, with bouncing temperatures. Then how could one human being adapt to that? That is a very old thing I'm interested in since very, very long time, even before I started medical studies. And when I was a resident in neurology resident in Toulouse University Hospital, I had the opportunity to prepare parallel to my neurological studies, the university diploma from Toulouse University. I was very lucky to have Professor Anne-Pavie Le Traon as a tutor, as a mentor. She is a renowned researcher in space studies, and actually I did my research memoir for this university diploma on cerebral blood flow regulation in microgravity. So this is how it started, and it's still going on with this collaboration with Professor Anne-Pavie Le Traon and Dr. Marc Kermorgan to study cerebral blood flow regulation in microgravity conditions. And yeah, this is ongoing. Yeah.
So when people imagine studies on astronauts, they often picture experiments on the International Space Station. But in practice, how are these studies really conducted? I guess you conduct some studies on Earth, I imagine. So what are the models that you're using?
Well, actually, as you know, when astronauts, cosmonauts, spacionauts, whatever you want to call them, when they go into to space, whether it's near or far away, well, they don't have lots of things that they can carry with them. Space is very limited. And this is how actually everything that could be portable, everything that was easy to take there was used. And this is how we got very easily the studies of cerebral blood flow from the transcranial Doppler monitoring. So yeah, this was done many times. and then to have to be able to have more data from a larger number of individuals than we perform the microgravity simulation studies that are based on two main models, either head down bed rest minus 6 degrees of tilting of the whole body for many weeks till 12 weeks, or dry immersion. That means that the volunteers are in a swimming pool with their skin protected from the hypothermia by a plastic film, and they can stay there for several days. And this is a very hard, quick mimic of microgravity condition. Well, we don't say there's no gravity, because then it's not possible there will be no gravity, but that's a microgravity. So.
Well, this sounds like an ideal job, to be laying in a pool for some days. You use healthy volunteers, I guess, for these studies, right?
Oh yeah, we have very enthusiastic volunteers, and I had the chance of talking to them and to see why they are there. At least the French ones who were in Toulouse Space Clinic. And actually, you have mainly two categories, from my experience: either the people who are in the health business, like us, or people who have a long interest in space studies, or engineers who work in companies have to do with space, or having or they are students in this field. So yeah, there's often a strong intellectual interest for them to come and say, "Hey, I'm volunteer." No.
So, and let's talk about what actually happens in the brain in space. Can you explain us how cerebral hemodynamics change in microgravity?
Well, there's the most caricatural thing is a fluid shift towards the upper body, and this can go till 1.5 liters or 2 liters of a fluid that is shifted toward the upper body, and this gives this characteristic puffy face. Okay, people remember from the photo of the spacenauts. And not only that, actually, the fact that people are up there, they are not doing, they don't have exercise to do. And also, they do not solicitate their muscles against gravity. So these three factors of major importance in bringing modifications of the cardiovascular system. And what happens is that actually the body interprets this fluid shift as actually if they were in excess of fluid, because the receptors for our blood volumes are in the upper part of the body. And then what happens? The neuroendocrine system, everything will work as if this were an excess. And the consequence is hypovolemia as a reaction to this. And this is how we find that actually in microgravity, a human being can easily have till 10 to 15% less of blood volume. And this will have consequences when spacenauts come back to Earth, because actually to adapt again to microgravity in this condition is difficult. And this is of a particular actually concern if they have to do a maneuver after landing to get quickly out of the spacecraft. So this is has been for a long time a motive for studies and concern. How does orthostatic intolerance happen? How are we able to counter that? And actually syncope will come from a diminished cerebral perfusion. And this is how our interest is focused on the cerebral blood flow regulation. And not only for that, also because of ophthalmological consequences, because mainly due to this fluid shift, the intracranial pressure will increase. And as a consequence of this, the ocular pressure will increase. And sometimes we can observe edema, and actually papillary edema. And this can have also consequences on the ability to see correctly. Okay, this is reversible days, but still it's a matter of preoccupation. And so the changes in the fluid, in the intracranial fluid, both from blood pressure changes, both from the orthostatic intolerance and its consequences on cerebral perfusion, and also from increase in ICP and papillary edema. These are the main concerns in terms of what we take care of as a neurologist.
So you said that these changes are reversible. Is that correct? And how long does it take for this change to reverse?
To be variable from one individual to another, but even when they are asymptomatic modifications in terms of papillary edema, for instance, this is preoccupying, because if we think that we will send a human being to Mars, for instance, we need to have sort of anticipation of what could be done to limit these consequences, knowing that there will be inter-individual variability that we observe already.
So when astronauts come back from space, do they have kind of an intermediate gravity to readapt, or do they just go back to their, let's say, normal life?
So the idea is that through this rigorous exercise program is to limit the shift that we observe of the autonomic nervous system going towards more and more stress reaction. And how do we do that? Well, actually, like we do in our patients who have been for a long time in a bedridden position and who have a little bit of trouble gaining their cardiovascular ability, capacity to do exercise again. So the idea with the exercise is to limit this impairment of the cardiovascular adaptability. And at the center of the autonomic nervous system, there is one parameter we measure. It's the baroreflex. It's the retrobiofeedback mechanism, mainly based on the vagal mechanisms of adapting the heart rate to the changes of blood pressure. And this has been for a long time been studied in microgravity. And this is actually the one parameter that goes down very quickly, both in space and also in microgravity simulation studies. This is how we expect to limit this deconditioning by the physical exercise. We know that this will increase the vagal component, the parasympathetic, and limit the stress sympathetic overactivation. I don't want to go too specialized on this, but we have new data also showing us that the increased intracranial pressure by itself will drive sympathetic activation. And this is also important to explain why there is this shift toward more sympathetic stress cardiovascular activation in these volunteers to microgravity studies.
So is what happened to the brain in space somehow similar to some pathological conditions on Earth? Can we use it as a model for something?
I know there has been a preoccupation with actually the mimicking of accelerated aging. Of course, we know that for bone and muscle, and this is also why the exercise program is important to limit the loss of bone and muscle, but also for arterial stiffness, for instance. There are studies showing some increase in arterial stiffness when it comes to large arteries, and we do not have data yet, prospective data for the microvascular cerebral system, but because of this shift away from vagal and towards sympathetic activation in space, because we have similar data in patients, young patients who have sickle cell disease, for instance, having this premature aging that is associated with this shift away from vagal and towards sympathetic activation, there is a hypothesis that could be, if we do not have countermeasures that are applied rigorously and they are sufficient, it could be a model of premature aging. And the data we have right now come from artery stiffness. But we do not have evidence to say it's irreversible, and we are still actually studying the impact of the countermeasures of limiting these changes and also shortening the reversal of these changes.
So, and beyond the changes in circulation and this adaptation that, say, are mostly reversible, do we know about any changes in brain structure or function, either during the missions, but maybe also afterwards or in the models that you're using for study this condition?
There are also these cerebrovascular changes we know about, mainly because actually of the deconditioning from gravity. And when we study them and we want to see changes of parameters, what we see is that autoregulation means the capacity of the cerebral blood flow to adapt to changes in blood pressure is modified in the spationauts and in microgravity studies volunteers. And actually, this is variable. At the beginning, we thought this would be uniformly actually modified in these volunteers. This is variable. And actually, the main culprit in there is, again, the autonomic nervous system. And if we study the cerebrovascular system independently from the cardiovascular autonomic nervous system, we don't have a clue what's happening. And partly due to these brain studies, we showed actually that the homeostatic mechanisms of the baroreflex at cardiovascular level and the cerebral autoregulation at cerebrovascular level are interacting all the time, and that this impact of autonomic nervous system of autoregulation is huge. So this is for functional changes. When it comes to structural changes, now you are driving us again to this discussion about the stiffness of the arteries. And we mainly have the data that come from the carotid studies, from the echography studies, knowing that astronauts can't carry their probe and the angle can be modified from an operator who is on the ground. And from these studies that have been performed in microgravity conditions, well, there is data about stiffness and a modification of structure, probably, but my interest for that probably driven also by the sympathetic activation that brings vasoconstriction in the system. And then second step is, as you point to, potential structural changes. Because we do not know yet, actually, from the biological point of view, what is behind this change in stiffness. Yeah.
Thank you very much. And I do have a curiosity. So nowadays, space travel is no longer only for astronauts. We're starting to talk about space tourism. And we know that while astronauts are super well selected, they're super healthy, and they undergo a lot of checks before their missions, it doesn't seem like space tourism is so, the selection is so strict. So I was wondering, from your perspective, are there some important risks for brain and cerebral circulation in people that are spending, of course, shorter periods in space for tourism, and they're not trained astronauts?
Thank you, Roberta, for this question. I think it's really premature to encourage, I will say, that it is safe to go to space when the people are not really trained to go to space. Like we are not within the selection that was there before, like these were military pilots, that were super fit. Now it's becoming a little more diverse profiles of people going to space, but still there is training, countermeasures, there are risks, we talk about them. So at this stage, I would be really cautious about this, and thank you for bringing up the question.
So I guess that space is not really a walk in the park, isn't it?
No.
Thank you very much for your answers, and I'm sure our audience is very interested. Is there something else you think we should add?
Well, I think that we had a lot of benefits coming from these space studies, which encourage us to develop thorough understanding of how cerebral blood flow regulation works. And this is really precious for us neurologists, dealing with cerebral circulation regulation. So we are in debt to the strokes. So I want to do the space studies for that.
Great. Thank you very much, Natalie, for being a guest in our podcast. This was a very fascinating conversation. And thank you very much for making a topic that is very complex and very far from like usual topics, so clear and so engaging.
Well, thank you, Roberta. Bye.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EAN Cast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.